This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. Farmers Alley Theater presents Murder for Two in partnership with the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. It starts tonight. The venue is the Little Theater on Oakland Drive. Here in the Takeda studio at WMUK, I have the two stars of Murder for Two, Joe Kanosian, one of the show's creators. He wrote the book and lyrics, and he plays all the suspects. And actor, composer, playwright Brett Ryback, who originated the role of would-be detective Marcus Moskowitz off-Broadway. Also joining us is director Jeremy Lapp, who served as associate director for the off-Broadway and National Tour productions. Fellas, say hello to Kalamazoo.
Hello.
Hello.
Woohoo.
All right. This is in conjunction with the Irving S. Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. So there's this brilliant connection between the piano and theater. The show runs from April 29th all the way to May 14th. So you guys are in for the long haul during the festival.
That's right.
Yeah.
To get started, Jeremy, what's it all about, and what can audiences expect?
Yeah, Murder for Two is a charming little two-hander. It's our tagline is kind of one piano, two actors, four hands, and 13 different characters. And it's a wonderful little piece that starts as a murder mystery and kind of transforms into a tour de force for two actors that just kind of take over the stage for an hour and a half, and all kinds of zaniness ensues. And they both accompany each other on the piano and turn from old men to women to children in the blink of an eye. And it's quite an incredible feat to watch, and it's hilarious at the same time.
Well, it takes a special performer or two performers to come up with a tour de force, relying on their own strengths, sense of humor.
And when they couldn't find them, they got us.
Joe, I think you are being a bit humble. You are one of the creators of this piece, and I want you to take me back to, was it Chicago?
Chicago was actually
one of the stops. The
midway point.
Take me back to where then?
I'll take you back, Kara, to an earlier time. Yeah. my writing partner, Kellen Blair, and I were just starting out in New York City, and we wanted to write a show that we could self-produce. So the emphasis had to be on cost effectiveness. I usually say cheapness in an interview, and then the theater gives me flack for using the word cheap. So we wanted to write a show that was an actual book musical that was telling, a narrative story over the course of an evening that required nothing on stage other than a chair and a piano and two actors and nothing else. And we wrote this in like 4 months. We had a first draft that was a very bare bones kind of sketch comedy version of a murder mystery. The emphasis was always on comedy. And of course, you want to remind audiences that this is a murder mystery and it is multi-character and all that. But it is first and foremost a very, very silly comedy. So we wrote this version and we started showing it to people. And it wound up, to our surprise, being something that other people were also interested in and wanted to produce themselves. And now you'll see a version that has more on stage than just a piano and two guys in a chair. So we went from the versions we did on our own to getting our first production was at the Adirondack Theater Festival in summer 2010. And I was in it at that time with Adam Overit, and then who's a New York actor. And then we went from there to San Francisco. That was the second developmental stop. And then the world premiere was at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. And then from there, we had to wait a year for a theater in New York to become available. And then in 2013, it opened at Second Stage Uptown in New York City with Brett and Jeff Blumenkrantz. And then it transferred to New World Stages, commercial venue. So it ran in New York for a year and then has been on tour for almost 2 years. But it's all been leading to the Gilmore Keyboard Festival.
And Kalamazoo.
That was all prelude to Kalamazoo. Absolutely.
Well, I have a murder mystery on my nighttime table just about constantly every mm-hmm. night. But even for people who don't read mysteries, the conventions to play with in murder mysteries are so fertile.
Yeah.
And people will recognize these stereotypes, caricatures everywhere you go. So what a great subject to play around with.
Well, when we were writing it, I have to tell you, you know, we, being new writers, we didn't really feel we had the clout to get the rights to anything. So we wanted it to be an original story. But that's exactly one of the reasons why we picked a murder mystery, was just what you said. It was, people know the conventions. The detective shows up, he interrogates, there's a false alarm, and then you get the real ending, and there's a resolution, and hopefully even a love story within that. So that's exactly why we picked it.
Jeremy, as a director, professional working in theater, when did you get a chance to first see Murder for Two, and what possibilities did you see?
Yeah, well, I work alongside Scott Schwartz, who is the original director of the show, and I'm his associate. And so we got passed the script sometime in, I don't know, 2012, 13, and he passed it along to me, and so I could read it. And I read it, and it's just hilarious. It's one of the first scripts that I've ever sat down and read and just laughed out loud at. And you could see it come to life on the page. And so when Scott and I were talking about it and coming up with different ideas of how to do it, it was just a blast. And there's so many great, just different moments in the show, and because of the murder mystery, and there's throwbacks to, you know, Clue and different things in the show like that. But we started off with a lot of different ideas with costumes and all these props and sock puppets, and eventually kind of strip all that away and just let the actors kind of do it on their own. And it's amazing because you really do see these transformations, you know, between the different characters come to life right before your eyes. And it happens so fast on stage that it's such a whirlwind, but it's so impressive at the same time.
Brett, how were you introduced to it?
Yeah, I probably around the same time that Scott and Jeremy saw it, because It was the winter of 2013, sounds about right. And I was friendly with one of the producers, Jason Raitt, on the show, and he approached me, and I think knew, because of my skill set as a composer and a pianist as well as an actor, knew that I would be appropriate to audition for the part. And I read the script, and it's funny because, contrary to what Jeremy said, I did not understand how two people were going to do this, because the script is so, all of the characters are so well defined in the script. It really feels like a cast of, you know, many, many people. And I just kept having to remind myself, no, this is one guy doing all this stuff. And I couldn't wrap my head around how that was going to show up, but the script was so great and so different. And of course, anything that showcases the skills like that and tour de force, you know, tend to play very well with audiences. And so I knew that it would be a very, you know, positive experience for everybody. And so, yeah, so I came to New York and met Joe and Kellen, and then came in and met Scott and Jeremy later on in that spring, and was offered the role and went from there.
It was a particular skill set I'm sure you were looking for to play along with you, Joe.
Yeah, it's a hard show to audition for, because you do have to show everybody a lot. You have to prove that you're a good actor, a good singer, you can move.
Right. Some people pad their resumes with, like, yes, I can ride a horse, and yes, I can I can speak Japanese. But, yeah, you know, Brett really has to have piano chops, acting, comedy, all of that.
Yeah. And when you go into an audition and you're given the audition sides, usually it's like one or two things. But for this, out of necessity, it's like at least four.
Oh, yeah. It's a big stack of pages and responsibilities. Different combinations of the responsibilities is too, you know, not, you know, just playing the piano, playing and singing, playing and acting, just singing. I mean, it's like all the different combinations that show up in the play.
Yeah. And what we always comment on too is that the hardest thing to do is to play and talk, because playing and singing, you're keeping a rhythm in your hands and in your voice, but talking, it is not to a rhythm. So to underscore yourself and to keep a steady beat while you're just carrying on a conversation is very difficult. And I think that's the mark of the real pro. Yeah.
It's the whole rub the belly, pat the head thing. Yeah, it's two different parts of your brain somehow interacting in a weird way.
So, yeah. Jeremy, you've seen this produced in many different spaces, all around the country.
All around the country. I mean, we've been on tour for the past 2 years or so and been in, I don't know, 12 or 13 different cities. And we're getting ready to start international productions now in Japan next month. So we've seen it all over the place. And it's been great to see, you know, how the show works in small theaters and as well as big theaters.
Right. So you drive into Kalamazoo and you have to size up the so-called Little Theater,
right.
Which is named after a fellow whose last name was Little. But
you
walk in,
theater.
You see the capacity of the crowd, and then you go back behind stage, and what are you thinking of?
Well, you're just thinking of how the show fits in the space and how intimate it wants to be, because the show is pretty intimate, and it likes to involve the audience, you know, because there's a lot of moments in the show where we kind of break the fourth wall and step out in the audience or invite the audience to come into the show. And so you're looking for a space that kind of achieves all of those things at the same time.
Interesting. There's a stage lip there that's going to kind of create a natural barrier.
There is, but we have stairs that kind of track down into the audience to allow easy access.
Yeah, nobody's
for some
safe.
Moments. No one's safe. That's right.
That's what I want to hear.
That'll sell some seats. Come and be accosted. That's Murder for Two at the Little Theater.
FarmersAlleyTheater.com for tickets if folks are already sold on Murder for Two. Okay, fellas, before we go into more backstory and things like that, let's break it up with a little piece. You're here in our big studio. We've got the piano tuned and ready to go. So would you set up the scenario here and give us a song?
Sure.
Do you want to move in? I'll move out while you...
For you at home, there are machinations going on that you just simply wouldn't believe. Yeah, now you heard him. All right. So, at a certain point in the mystery, you got to underscore it, you know. The investigating officer, played by
Brett,
yes, is interrogating the suspects that are in this closed drawing room, and to his shock and horror, he discovers that there's a 12-member boys choir that's been hiding in the room the whole time. So should we just go from there?
Yeah. And so as he's trying to usher them out, because of course these young boys would be too, you know, horrified to see the murder of a, you know, right before them, they assure him that they have seen a lot worse.
Difficult, because of one lousy dead body? You got a lot to learn about kids, Chief. We've been around the block a time or two and seen a lot, all right. Don't imagine that we're not all right, cause we've seen a lot worse. To tell the truth, if we was younger, we'd be getting sicker now. But our skin's a little thicker now, cause we've seen a lot worse. We seen a fella torn in two one day by a gorilla at the zoo one day. We hardly ever make it through one day without a glimpse of horror. No need to intervene, we seen a lot worse.
Well, I remember what it felt like to be your age, Timmy, trying to be brave, wanting to impress the crowd. It's okay if you're scared.
Scared over this? This ain't nothing.
Says you.
Says me in a big way, brother. Go ahead, Yonkers, tell them what I mean. You needn't bother thinking stuff like this could be depraving us. It's a little late for saving us, cause we seen a lot worse.
Well...
We seen a chump who held his breath for longer than an hour once. Saw my granny in the shower once. Yeah, we seen a lot worse. We seen a baby being born one day. We seen a fat guy eating corn one day. We seen them both while watching porn one day. And still we go on smiling. Brother, it's all routine. We seen a lot worse.
There's a number I want you boys to call when you get home.
Say, you're okay, Chief. I tells you what, you ever need anything, you just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you? Show him, Yonkers.
You just put your lips together and...
Yes, Yonkers, I know how to whistle.
Well, you just whistle and the whole choir's got you back. Any place, any time.
Say, by the way, how come your 12-member boys choir only consists of you three boys?
Oh, that's a funny story. That also happens to fit perfectly onto our refrain. Tell 'em, Skid.
Went on a camping trip and lost 9 members of the choir there. When our tent was set on fire there, he always seen a loud voice.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I can't imagine how my best pal Johnny must have felt that night when his face began to melt that night. But we seen a loud voice. We spent a night trapped in IKEA once, beside a kid with diarrhea once. We saw a show called Mamma Mia once. And still we're somehow smiling, though certainly ain't pristine. We seen a lot. Stuff that could turn you green, we seen a lot. And if we reach 13, we'll see a lot worse.
Wow.
Machinations. More machinations.
Okay, that was Joe Kanosian and Brett Ryback as the two lead characters in Murder for Two. It's fantastic. I'm not crying. I'm holding back so much, like, uproarious laughter.
For those
here.
Of you at home or in your car, she's sobbing. Tears running down her face.
Great.
And it should be, we should say that for the people just listening, what they miss out on is the fact that during the show, Joe and I are changing hands at the piano. He's on his knees during that entire number. I'm standing up at the piano. There's a dance break
there's
that
a
we
dance
cut
break,
out.
Right, yeah, yeah. Like, tap dancing on your knees.
There's a whole lot of stuff going on that.
Why didn't you take it easy on yourself, Joe?
Right.
I call this show my 90-minute high intensity workout. We do it for, you know, I do that 4 times a week or 8 times a week,
you don't
whatever
need
the
cardio
case may be. You don't need to go to the gym.
Yeah, well, you know, it was all because it was written to just be about the actors and just, you know, let the audience just see, you know, how much these two people could do before they keel over. And that's what it is, you know. What did Scott used to say in rehearsals about people go to the theater to see it cost the actor
to
something.
See how much it cost them? Yeah, they want to see them go through something on stage.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
we'll give you that applause, but yeah, really,
you have to earn it. Yeah,
yeah. I know there are other preceding, you know, great 1- and 2-person theater shows.
Nope. This is the first one.
I thought I'd let you, you know, acknowledge those who came before.
There aren't any.
Influences.
Just kidding. Just kidding. Yeah, of course. There's tons. Yeah.
I think I've seen a couple. Obviously, there's things like 39 Steps, you know, where the actors play a lot of different roles and pop in and out of characters. And it's really done with, you know, which is with minimal set pieces. And then there's something like, what's the 2 Pianos, 4 Hands is a big piano show that's going around the country. This is one of the few, though, that I've seen where it's just 1 piano, 4 hands. That's that I felt was a little nouveau to
me. I think the ones we were most inspired by in writing it were The Mystery of Irma Vapp.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Which is a Charles Ludlum play. It's a takeoff of Hitchcock's Rebecca, but it involves vampires and werewolves and mummies and everything. And it's very much one character wants to talk to the other one who clearly plays all the rest of them, but that character refuses to turn. I mean, there's all sorts of things that were kind of an inspiration for us. And then also 39 Steps was a huge inspiration in not just stylistically, but at the time we were writing this, I'm just going to take you back. No, at the time we were writing this, I was cast in a show, a really big new musical that was going to go to La Jolla Playhouse in San Diego. And it was going to be this massive cast and orchestra and sets and everything. And it was 2008 into 2009 when all the theaters were scaling way back because of the economy. So that theater that was going to give me my big break wound up doing the 39 Steps. And that was a big influence on us. It was like, okay, so now the trend is these show, rather than going as big as you can, theaters all seem to be going as like small and inventive as you can. So we'll write this to kind of fit into that world.
Well, you both wear so many hats in this production that I'm really curious to know what was first. Like, were you a musician turned actor or a singer turned actor?
Yeah, that's a good question.
This is Brett.
Dancers. Both of us.
Yeah. Painter. No, I think, I mean, realistically, I think I was an actor first. I started acting at a very young age. We should say at this point that Joe and I are both from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, just across the lake there. So growing up in Milwaukee, I did a lot of children's theater and professional theater in the area as a young person. But music was always in my life. My mom was a you know, singer at church, and she sang in a local chorus, and so I think I grew up singing. So music was always there. Acting started early, and then shortly thereafter, I just took to the piano quite naturally. We had a piano in my house, and I think because I was composing melodies, and I wanted to figure out how to, you know, transcribe them and make them playable by other people, I then took to the piano and sort of started learning that around, you know, age 9 or 10. So it was, you know, it was all very early on, and more or less all at once the performing arts just kind of converged in me.
Maybe more than other artistic disciplines, music theater is still a very
hybrid, yeah, multifaceted.
And you don't learn the piece and play it exactly the same every time. It moves, it continually morphs.
That's true, and especially in this show, then there's definitely an improvisational feel to the show, and it's so fun for us, you know, that see the show, you know, hundreds of times, that every night is a little something different, and for the audience, that's great too, because you never really know what's going to happen in certain moments, and it just leads to a really fun time at the theater.
And Joe, did you also take a path like Brett did when you were growing up in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I mean, I came to it, I think, kind of a different side of things. I was much more on the piano side and much more interested in the writing, composing. How does someone come up with those ideas and get them down on paper for other people to interpret? And I loved performing, but was very scared of it. And my way in through middle school and high school and college and in the real world was like, as long as I'm behind a piano, I can be very, very wacky. But if I'm away, then I suddenly lose my crutch and then I'm not as competent. So that was kind of how I got to it. And I like to think, you know, the show kind of helped me move out of that feeling in a way, too.
Yeah, sorry, but you're the star along with Brett, so can't get away from that. Music theater, too, requires collaboration, such collaboration. I read, you know, these now legendary stories of Jerome Robbins and Stephen Sondheim and Hal Prince, you know, fighting, duking it out, but creating, you know, stage classics. It can't be a one-man show, which is... I'm not sure where I'm going with that. You know, I think that's very special.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think especially with something like this, which is so highly theatrical, because there are really no answers, and certainly no wrong answers necessarily, and very, while the script is obviously the characters and the scenario is given very clearly, the creation of it is really up for grabs. And I mean, Joe would know a lot more than I would about other interpretations. And now that the show is going to be licensed, you know, there will be even more of those in the world. Of course, I've only seen our production and our version of this, but I think that, you know, I think that there's so much opportunity for interpretation and for different choices. And then when you have only two people creating all of it, it becomes a dance, you know, and the director is obviously there to kind of help shape that and to also put ideas into the pot. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's the two of us looking into each other's eyes, reading the audience. You know, sir, this is, you know, this show has a lot of different colors that you can highlight depending on what the audience seems to get. You know, some audiences are really invested in the murder mystery. Some are really invested in the very silly childlike humor of it. Some are, you know, and you start to pick up on that while you're on stage and you're reading it and you're going, oh, okay, if I lean into this, that makes them laugh more. Let's kind of, if we go faster, they seem to like the speed. If we go slower, they seem to be listening more. I mean, it's a really in the moment collaboration.
On certain nights, there's somebody in the audience who laughs in the funniest, loudest way, and you have to kind of play through that. But I just wondered if that, you know, that creates spontaneity.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, of course.
Especially in Joe's version of this show.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but suffice to say, go about your business while you're watching the play. But if your phone's on, you may hear about it from us at some point in the show. That's all. And that's not a challenge. That's a warning, I guess.
Kind of tagging off what Brett said, it really is about a partnership. And that's the tricky thing with this show, is finding the right partnership between the two guys, because the timing is so specific about how fast this whole thing moves. So it's great to have these two back doing the show together, because they, I mean, Brett did it last in L.A. at the Geffen. What was that, a year ago?
Almost a year ago. Yeah, maybe like eight months ago or
and
something.
And then Joe was with us on tour for about the first year or so through San Diego.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah. And then I did it in Denver again after that. So
right,
like,
that's
yeah.
right. But to have them,
he did it at the Geffen for a couple weeks with me. So
to have them back together doing it here at Farmer's Alley, it's just such a treat. And I think the audiences are really going to love it.
We've got hundreds of performances of experience falling on our faces.
Absolutely. And I should say that I think part of what also makes this team very special is the fact that Joe and I also did it originally in New York for a time together, and we were there in the room and at the very beginning, the build of it all, which is, you know, that's just a unique point of view and perspective to bring to the show, that you're really seeing the people who were present at the birth of this production.
Would you treat us to another selection from Murder for Two?
Absolutely. Machinations happening. You're not even hearing a thing, though, are you? I'm going to get out of your way.
Oh, you're gonna pull it out.
All right. This time, Brett Rybak is taking center stage at the piano.
So Officer Marcus encounters a very difficult suspect.
Set of people.
Yeah, they're all difficult, but especially difficult is Dr. Griff, a very gruff psychiatrist who's one of the suspects. And he's willing to give information, but
there's a key piece of information that we've come to learn Dr. Griff knows.
And he tells Officer Marcus,
"I only reveal secrets during friendship songs."
Oh, do you?
When I'm meeting some resistance, there's no doubt I'll find assistance from a friend like you. When a case is getting messy and I'm feeling SOS-y, your support will pull me through. Murder never seems alarming when my arm is arm and arming with a pal who's always true. Sure, the plot is bound to thicken, but my pulse'll never quicken, 'cause I'm sticking with a friend like you.
But you're only saying that to get me to talk.
No, every bone of mine could shatter, but it really wouldn't matter with a friend like you.
I'm listening.
Violent death can be a doozy, but my songs are never bluesy, 'cause with you I can't stay blue.
I wanna believe.
Sure, the killer could defeat me, knock me down and start to beat me, but I'll laugh until they're through. 'Cause I won't be getting testy while I'm jesting with my bestie. Yeah, I'm blessed to have a friend like you.
For true?
Yep. A friend won't ever leave you hanging when the day brings stress. A friend says yes, 'cause the secret is swell when you never don't tell. So if trouble should destroy me, it won't bother or annoy me
with a friend like me,
you, us. There's no need to drown in sorrow if your legs should break tomorrow, 'cause for you, I'd break mine too.
I love you.
Oh boy.
No dilemma will dissuade you with your chum around to aid you
and to help me crack each clue.
We'll be BFFs forever.
That's redundant, but whatever.
I'm so glad to have a friend like you.
Okay, I'll tell ya.
Glad to have a friend like you.
I'm glad to hear it.
Glad to have a friend like
your big secret, Dr. Griff.
After the big finish, buddy.
And you! A one, two, three, yeah!
Oh, Brett Ryback and Joe Kanosian just won the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival.
Take that, Tony Bennett.
Murder for Two opens on April 29th and continues through May 14th at the Irving S. Gilmore International Keyboard Festival, a collaboration with Farmers Alley Theater. FarmersAlleyTheater.com is where you can find tickets. Gentlemen, this has been an unforgettable session for me. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
We look forward to seeing the audiences soon.
Yeah, come see us.